Welcome back to News Views. Are you there, Fred?
Yep, right here.
Okay, my name's Garland Nixon, and I'm here with
Mark Levine.
And you're listening to News Views 89.3 FM, WPFW, Washington, D.C., your local Pacifica affiliate. And we're talking about the environmental movement and the mainstream environmental movement, which, again, as we said, one of the issues that I think we haven't thrown out, really discussed it. A lot of these mainstream environmental organizations have considerable resources. They get big dollars from these, and not only that, they have considerable power on Capitol Hill. They have lobbyists, etc. And some of these issues that face people of lesser means and people of color would be very easy for them to address and change, and they wouldn't have to completely change everything they're doing. Just devote a small portion of their resources and administrative power to work with them. Not only that, let me bring another thing in, Fred. Not only that, they would bring in an entire new group of people. They would bring in a lot more people who are on the ground, so they would have a larger number of people to work with.
Well, yes, but the implications of doing social justice work it's a lot more controversial than picking up trash and cleaning up water and protecting air. So I would say, I'd suggest, there's a suggestion maybe that the reason these groups have lots of resources is because they have been silent, I think, on social justice matters, right? They can attract more money, we're talking about clean air, than they can about struggling underserved communities.
Well,
right.
we've got a couple. Well, you haven't said we're going to go to the phones in a second.
I was just going to say I think you could combine the two issues, that they shouldn't be seen as one or the other. You could talk about clean water in an underserved community, clean air in an underserved community. That there might be strength in numbers, not just in numbers of people, but in numbers of issues. I don't blame anyone who's concerned about the Chesapeake Bay because they live on the Chesapeake Bay. That's fine. Just like I don't blame anyone who lives on the Anacostia River that's concerned about the Anacostia River. But their strength, if everyone who lives close or near or likes to have fun or fish or play in a waterway, if they all join together about keeping all waterways clean, I just think there's strength in numbers.
And it's important to talk about this because, you know what's important about it? Because it's probably making people uncomfortable. And if you're making people uncomfortable, it has been my experience, if people are uncomfortable, there's room. That's when they're growing. We've got Steve on line one. Steve, welcome to WPFW, and thank you for calling.
Thank you very much, Garland. I just want to say, first off, love the show. It's a Friday night ritual with me and my almost two-year-old son when I'm getting him ready for bed. We really enjoy the show and the great topics. Very provocative.
Thank you.
I hope your son likes us, too. I'm not sure he understands all the issues, but
he does. No, he doesn't, but getting him an early start, you know, when accidents.
That's true.
But, I think you really touched on a very important topic here. And I just wanted to say this. To me, this is a much broader issue than just the environmental movement. I think this affects advocacy groups with health care, mm-hmm. with nutrition, with food safety that I've certainly seen in my own life as well. I think what this really represents is a change that happened really in the 1970s. It was really the rise of the D.C.-based advocacy group. Prior to that time, most national advocacy groups were built around the state affiliate, the chapter-level concept, the grassroots, you know, president, vice president, people, you know, walking the precinct, you know, walking the church, you know, kind of getting, kind of that grassroots thing going. But in the 70s, you know, we really saw the rise, you know, with this D.C.-based, you know, kind of consulting class, and certainly the rise of these D.C.-based groups. Many of these groups, you mentioned partnering with local groups, they don't have any infrastructure to do that. They don't have, a state chapter. They don't have a local chapter. Basically, all they want out of the members, quote-unquote members, is people to write a check, after they get a direct mail thing in the mailbox or, you know, sign an online petition. I've interacted. I'm involved in, you know, the public health community, and I see this with our national organizations. they don't want the unpolished, rank and file getting involved. You know, they want the D.C.-based, you know, smooth-talking, Ivy League credentialed class doing all of the communicate. I just want to make one more comment.
Certainly.
This is so much more class-based, I think, than race. My wife went to the Yale School of the Environment, I know this from having gone to law school. There are hundreds of people applying for every one of these jobs at groups like the Sierra Club or the NRDC. I mean, it's just bulletproof. elites wall to wall,
yep,
to get even your foot in the door there, even the mailroom.
Well, thank you very much, Steve. Brilliant, brilliant call. I certainly appreciate that, and thanks for listening. We're going to try to get some of these callers. We have some great callers, Fred, so we're going to try to get some of these callers. We want to hear what they have to say, and then we can discuss that. We've got who's next? Persona, thank you. Welcome to WPSW.
Hey. You ready for me?
Yes, we are.
Go ahead, Persona.
Okay, how you doing?
We're good. Great. Thank you for calling.
Hey, I just heard the show. I just got off of work, and I'm so amped by this show. I'm just finding out about it. And I just wanted to let you guys know, I'm actually a teacher and an activist in the community, and we work on an event every month to spread awareness about a range of issues. And we would love it if you know, you guys, Mr. Dixon and if you guys would come and speak this month. Our theme is actually awareness of the connections and responsibility we have to the earth on an interdependent, historical, and even deeply spiritual level. And I would love it if you guys could, you know, speak on what you guys are talking about right now, because it's so important. It's over at Soul 57, April 20th from 12 to 3:45. If y'all are available, I would love, you know, for the community to, you know, meet you guys and hear your perspectives.
Well, let me give you my email address, and it's Garland. I don't know if you're in a position to write it down. It's garlandin@gmail.com. Are you in a position to write that down? And certainly any of my listeners can contact me anytime, but are you in a position to write that down?
I do. And what was it again?
It's Garland. My name is Garland Nixon, and it's my name and then the first letter of my last name, garlandin@gmail.com. Send me an email, garlandin@gmail.com, and I'll get back with you, and hopefully we'll be able to work that out.
And I'm Mark, M-A-R-K, at marklevinetalk.com. You can also find me on Facebook, Mark Levine, or I'm on Twitter at Mark Levine Talk, MarkLevineTalk, and I'm definitely interested. So just shoot me an email, a Twitter, a tweet, or follow me on Facebook, and we'll chat.
And we'll also get in touch with Fred and see if he wants to do it. And
if Mr. Tupman's around, you know, that's such a crucial role he's playing, and, you know, for everybody to meet him, that would be great. Yeah, all three of you guys would be wonderful.
Thank you. And next caller? We've got Steve. Steve, welcome to WPFW.
Yes, this is Mike.
Oh, Mike. Mike. Oh, sorry, Mike.
Go ahead, Mike. Steve. Apologize. Go ahead.
Yes, first of all, I'd like to thank Fred Tupman for the great work that he does, and WPFW for putting issues like this on the air generally that aren't covered in any other media. But I would like to amplify a little bit on what Fred said, you know, that grassroots efforts many times are edgy because they aren't financed well and they have different issues, and really they kind of scare the large organizations that are out there. And the large organizations that are out there have all of the wealth and they have all the money, and sometimes it's actually coming from the problem people, and other times it's actually coming from our taxpayer funded dollars. So the slice of the pie, the slice of the resource pie to go solve solutions that grassroots organizations care about really don't trickle down. The trickle down theory just does not work to the people that actually could do an awful lot of money, an awful lot of good with a very little amount of money if they had some of it.
I'd like to hear Fred's response to that, if I could. Mr. Tupman?
Well, yes, I totally agree. And to reiterate what I was trying to say earlier, too, is that I think that changing the social economic realm, which is frankly responsible for many of the environmental problems, that is very controversial work. If the environmental movement pursues simply cleaning up air and water generically, that's very uncontroversial.
Right.
It actually is work that is not inclined to take on the, frankly, the worst problems that are facing people from a class level.
Yeah.
Changing the status quo.
Mm-hmm.
So what I was suggesting is that it's not attractive, it's not appealing to moneyed groups that rely on big overheads and, you know, impressive offices. It's not very appealing for them to take up the causes of people who are suffering from class-based environmental problems. Not their problem. It's not their problem.
Let me give the number out again. Feel free to call 202-588-0893. 202-588-0893. Call the News Views and be a part of this. Mark, did you have a comment?
Well, yeah, I'd just be curious, Fred. You know, we're talking about the most serious environmental problems of underserved communities. I assume a lot of it is toxic waste, is landfills, is waste in the water or in the air. And I guess my question is, that is clean air, that is clean water, which you say is uncontroversial. Why couldn't the Sierra Club work on cleaning up the Anacostia River, for example?
Well, I mean, I think they do. I mean, I think Sierra Club in particular does do environmental justice. They have a person in charge of doing that type of stuff. But the mainstream of the money that is raised by the organization doesn't come from folks who support that particular work. I mean, I think it's a credit to Sierra Club that they're doing anything at all on it. But the 1% funders, right, the major donors, those tend to be folks who, again, are worried about the, you know, wildlands and, like I said, nature-based places, working on those, again, social economic problems that have an environmental nexus in many cases.
One of the things, and our last caller, Mike, I happen to know he's an environmentalist, he's waged some very successful battles. And when we talk about the fact that it's class-based and race-based, I happen to know that some of the issues that he's dealt with were where builders were going to come in and take some pristine wetlands and build townhomes and all kinds of things, you know, and just destroy all the wetlands for God knows thousands of acres, and Mike and other people would fight that. But these builders were people who had a lot of money, who might have been donating, you know what I mean, who might have been donating. Where one of the other things he dealt with was the big box stores, where you had small communities on the bay that were people who had, you know, farmed and raised the local things, et cetera, and these big Walmarts or whoever were going to come in and disrupt the town. And, of course, bringing in all the new roads that had to be built and the new things that were going to be built with them, which was going to bring more pollution, was going to bring more runoff, et cetera, like that. And I think one of the issues is these are powerful entities. These were powerful economic entities that many times, you know, are providing money that maybe some of these major groups don't want to offend, if you know what I'm saying.
Well, totally. In fact, you know, part of my work is suing housing developers and others who are involved with bad environmental practice. We've never sued one of those interests that didn't have some environmental presence on a board of directors somewhere. In many instances, these mainstream groups have gone into partnership, right? But part of the role that mainstream environmentalism plays is it protects capitalism, right? If you want big money, if you see a money group that has no trouble raising money, I assure you, they're not fighting the man. That's key, right? So that's very hard, I think, for people of color to ally themselves with organizations that are partners with the very same interests that are tearing up their neighborhood.
I would just say, we talk about money in Washington all the time, you and me, Garland, and this is really a subset of the larger problem of, you know, them that have the money controls the politicians. I mean, that's the problem with lobbying in general, is that only rich people can afford it, that if you want to fight the National Rifle Association, then you look for a rich man like Bloomberg to fight them. Even though I support Bloomberg's cause, it's sad that it requires a very rich person on your side before you get any justice. And I guess my question would be, you know, to find some rich people that care about environmental justice. Unfortunately, you have to. But there are some of those out there. I'd just be curious to know whether lobbying, what you really think we need to do, Fred Tumman, do we need to lobby the Sierra Club and NRDC? Do we need to encourage them to look at issues of environmental justice? Do we need to protest? What would you advocate?
Well, I'm trying not to finger point a particular group. Everyone does what they do, and I realize that that all makes some contribution. What I think we have to do also, though, is to help people understand that grassroots work is really where the action is, right? Grassroots work, for a number of reasons you can't stamp out. It's inherently empowering of the people and the communities involved. It's very democratic. It is not reliant on money, and so it is resistant to coercion from vested interests. And yet the grassroots work is invisible. It's work that is seen as Bush League and amateur and unimportant to mainstream groups who are, quote, the professionals. And mm-hmm. We've created an entire professional class of environmentalism who work for money. And so any day of the week, they're likely to make a better decision about their careers than they are about the environment.
And that's true of lobbyists throughout Washington.
And the other part of it here is the other way around, is what's in it for them, for this reason. You know, the mainstream environmental organizations, and again, I'm not, the Sierra Club, the Wildlife Federation, they do wonderful work, and I know people involved. I'm not here to say they're bad. We're saying how they can make it better. But one of the things is this. And I've heard this from people in some fairly powerful left-leaning organizations, and they'll say, well, you know, if we could get the black community involved in this, if we could get the Latino community involved with this, et cetera, that if they want, if you look at, say, the last presidential election, where none of the candidates even talked about it, the president, they didn't talk about climate change.
No,
they didn't talk about
these things. Asked, that they talked about it for a few minutes. And
now, if the black community and the Latino community, which have become powerful, powerful voting blocks, are involved in the environment, the mainstream environmental movements, then they certainly, you've got two additional powerful voting blocks that can make their concerns about climate change, et cetera, known, because they know that these environmental groups are also working on the, you know, environmental justice issues. This can make a big difference in coercing the politicians to say, you know, if I want to get, you know, if I want to get the black vote and the Latino vote and I want to get elected, I'm going to have to deal with climate change for one thing, because they're pushing my buttons on that too.
Well, Fred, you pointed out that the grassroots movements are secret. No one knows they're going on. Maybe then the answer is, if these national organizations would shine a light on and join with and partner with these grassroots organizations, we could have the best of both worlds.
Well, I agree, and I think there's a tension there. I think there's nothing in it for a large mainstream group to celebrate the grassroots. They can't charge anybody for it. It's inherently not a money enterprise.
Mm-hmm.
And frankly, it takes a lot of patience and a lot of commitment to deal with community-based concerns as opposed to a slogan. I mean, that's what large groups do. They brand these issues so that you're just working on a slogan. At the end of the day, it's almost meaningless. What I call a MacGuffin. You know, it advances the plot line. It gets people to write checks. What does it really mean, right? What does Save the Bay really mean? Particularly if you're talking to somebody that's nowhere near it, who only sees the bay on the Discovery Channel, if at all. They're upstream, and nobody's interested in working on those local problems that drain downstream, because all the focus is where the money is.
Excellent. Right. Well, we have another caller, and a gentleman that I'm very, very familiar with, who I'm very proud of, who does some brilliant work throughout our nation, Reverend Yearwood. Reverend Yearwood, welcome to WPFW.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much. It's so good to be calling. I'm very impressed by this discussion. You know, this is WPFW is an amazing radio station. I go on the country, and I just long when I come back home to D.C., and to hear this conversation. It's so important to hear this going on now.
Well, thank you. And I know you do a lot of social justice work, and we're talking about environmental organizations. But, you know, do you see that also in a broader context in social justice work, of where the groups that should be, or maybe in some way would be concerned with the black community or with people of lesser means, who it's difficult to get them to actually bring diversity to their organization, as opposed to say, okay, we've got this thing we're working on, let's go get the black groups to help us with this, as opposed to saying, let's have African American or Latino people within our organization who are actually helping to make the decisions as to what we're going to address in the first place. Do you see that yourself in your work?
You definitely do, but let me say, it's a very layered process, though. I mean, it's not as easy as black and white, clearly. I think that, yes, I mean, for our overall goal for our progressive movement is that we want to have fairness and justice. And so we know we cannot have a progressive movement that is a segregated progressive movement. Mm-hmm. We can't have the police brutality rally be all black, the peace rally be all white, immigration be all brown, and so forth. We must break down those lines, but also we can't be siloed, which we're hearing on this show, that we can't be a siloed movement in which you have the EJ movement over here and other movements being off to the side. You know, I grew up in D.C. One of my mentors was Damu Smith. Mm-hmm. And also Dr. Ben Chavis with the Hip Hop Summit. So, you know, I came into this process understanding, that dynamic. But I will say this, though. I think it is unfair. And I don't think that environmental organizations are inherently trying to block out. And I know right. There could be some discussion on that. I do believe this, though. I do think there's a cultural difference on how we organize. There's going to be a cultural difference, even how those of us who are in D.C. would organize different from those who are in New Orleans. Mm-hmm. There's going to be a cultural way in difference, and I think that is also very important. So even how we operate and how we organize and how we mobilize, it will be different depending on different areas in the country. Now, with that being said, I definitely agree with the resource question. I personally, you know, we just did the Ford on Climate rally, which we did on the mall at the White House. And I know Hip Hop Caucus, along with Sierra Club and along with 350, you know, led that convening with others. But at the same time, let me say this. I think it's very important for those of us from whatever community you come from to work together. And I think we must hold ourselves accountable. I want to hold not just Sierra Club accountable, but I want to hold the black church accountable, who's been preaching right. about this and talking about this in their pulpits. I want to hold the fraternities and sororities accountable as well. We must come together because this issue is not an issue about equality, but an issue about existence. If we lose this battle regarding climate change, we lose it all.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that, Reverend. You would appreciate your calling then, and certainly, you know, we want to hear from you on a regular basis. Be a part of
that was very powerful. I'd like to particularly like his call out to the black church because the extent that the grassroots organizations are out there, and that church groups, for example, are taking care of the environment in their own backyards, then people need to contact each other, right? I mean, the national groups need to contact the grassroots groups. The grassroots groups need to contact the national groups and find out what they can work together because the Reverend's absolutely right. We have strength in numbers. We have strength in coalition. Right. We need to see more non-brown faces at the immigration rallies. We need to see more non-gay faces at the gay rights rallies. Right. We need to see white faces at civil rights rallies for African Americans, non-union faces at union rallies. The point is we all have to work together on all these issues, and united we stand, divided we fall.
And if you look at what happened politically with the coalition that we had that was able to elect President Obama,
sure.
It's obvious that there is a new coalition in America that's very powerful, and we have to make sure that coalition comes together to be as active as it can be as a group in all phases, even within the environmental community. I think we've got another call, and I think that would be John. Welcome to WPFW, John.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Hi, John.
What I wanted to say was I work in television. I've done a number of segments, particularly on the Anacostia River. And, you know, the environmental catastrophe that's going on in the river is pretty astonishing. You know, one of the factoids that came away from us on one of the segments we did was that the equivalent of 3 747s every month worth of debris is put into the Anacostia.
Wow.
So yeah. It's astonishing that, you know, I don't personally believe that we should be looking to or relying on corporations or larger organizations. I really think, as a lot of your callers have said, that it's really a grassroots effort. We need to, as human beings, we need to stop soiling our own nest. We need to take responsibility for this. Of the two pieces I've done, one was actually funded by the Koch brothers, which was really interesting.
They won't hire you again. that was a one-time offer. I don't think you wrote what they wanted you to, but go ahead.
Yeah, no, it's interesting. No, they're two different things. Well, I don't necessarily agree particularly with the Koch brothers from their political viewpoint, but as sort of, you know, quasi-extreme libertarians, they do have conservation as part of their DNA.
I had no idea. I wouldn't trust it, but go ahead.
I'm not debating. I'm just saying that's just sort of like my research based on what I've done. But when I did one of the videos was with the Anacostia River folks, and they actually, you know, they're people that are passionate about it, and you know, and I think that is truly a grassroots effort, and I really think what you guys are doing to help organize that is really, really important. That we shouldn't like mess up our own environment. We have to take care of it very locally. When I saw the statistics, I was just blown away.
Thank you very much, John. And I think what we're doing here, Mark and Fred, I think what we're doing here is important because this is an issue that isn't discussed. And that's what we try to do, Mark and I try to do here on News Views, you know, is find issues that either aren't being discussed or that we can discuss in a new, unique way. Now, Fred, let me throw this out to you. I think one of the things I'm hearing here, there are two things I'm hearing. I'm hearing grassroots, and then I'm hearing broad, more mainstream organizations. Is it realistic to believe that we can connect the broad mainstream organizations with the grassroots organizations to work together? Or, you know, is it never the twain shall meet? What do you think about that?
I think we have a shot at it, and I think we have a better shot than people might imagine because we have a better story to tell. The story of grassroots is a story of spiritually connected people to land, air, water, and sun, right? It is a story of a movement that cares about people and communities just as much as it does about science, mm-hmm. right? But the mainstream movement, in my view, and this is an extreme view, I realize, I believe has sucked the life out of this rich, layered subject matter that could be so inclusive by its very nature. It brings people together. Nothing lights up people but the opportunity to talk about their own particular connection, right? When we started the show, right, you talked about your connection to the Potomac.
Mm-hmm.
And this is such a powerful thing that is not being harnessed by a movement that has become obsessive about getting along with the existing power establishment, not disrupting the social economic balance that has created many of these ecological catastrophes, and raising money. Because if you ask most mainstream environmentalists that there's been a good program and a bad one, they will tell you the one that was good was the one that got funded.
See,
that is how blind I think this movement has become to the power of compassion for people as it affects their environmental realm, where they are. That's the environment, where they are.
I'll tell you, here's what I've learned from this discussion. I hadn't quite thought of it, I must admit, in the environmental realm. But this is part of the larger problem in Washington, which is that lobbyists, even things we agree with, not even talking about the things we don't agree with, but lobbyists, even for causes we agree with, exist because of money.
Mm-hmm.
They finance, they can affect elections because of money. They give money to politicians. They get rewarded based on money. It's still based on money, not based on the works they do. So you can have organizations, it could be an environment, one organization helps the environment, cleans it up a lot, and another one has more politicians in their pocket. Guess which one's going to get funded? Guess which one's going to get all the money? The one that owns the politicians, not the one that actually gets the job done. And that's broader than the environmental movement. There's a lot of complaints on a lot of lobbies, not just on the right but on the left, that they're more focused on raising money than on actually doing the good they need to do. So to me, this is a very important discussion, but actually part of a larger discussion about how much money controls things in Washington.
Well, I'll tell you something I got out of this show, and that is that groups, whether it's the large environmental groups or whether it's the other, whether there are groups that are large national groups that are working on, single payer or MoveOn.org or all
any
of these other groups that I support, I completely support. Don't get me wrong there. But I think these groups also need to look in the mirror.
That's right.
And they need
every
to say,
group. Group needs to look in the mirror and say, are we doing our cause?
Right.
Are we working to raise money?
And I think they also need to look in the mirror and say, let's look at the upper echelon of this organization and let's ask ourselves, do we have any diversity in the administrative part of this organization? Do we have any people of color? Do we have women? Do we have any various? Is there any, or is it just an organization that means well and does good, but they don't get a diverse perspective because it's lily white at the top? At the bottom may be another thing, but the people who make decisions, you need diversity there. And I think of the powerful left-leaning organizations need to look in the mirror and ask themselves questions. And this is not pointing a finger. This is saying they can be better if they are more diverse.
Well, I wholeheartedly agree. It's not enough to congratulate yourself on not being racist or classist. The real job is to work to defeat racism and classism in your good work.
Well, Fred, we are just about out of time here, but I'm going to have to thank you. I think it's been a brilliant show. We want to keep in touch with you, and we hopefully we'll hear from some of our callers, garlandin@gmail.com. Mark?
Go to my website, marklevinetalk.com. Leave a comment there or follow me on Facebook.
Fred, if they want to get in touch with you, how would they do that?
Pretty easy to find me. Just Google me, Patuxent Riverkeeper. We're easy to find on the web.
Patuxent Riverkeeper. You're listening to News Views. My name is Garland Nixon. I'm here with Mark Levine. News Views is on every Friday from 6 to 7 p.m. Mark, we need to do something on organized labor. We need to do something on labor. Organized labor is under attack, and I'm going to put together a show on labor. That's what makes our middle class. News Views. See you next Friday, 6 p.m. Thank you for listening to WPR.
Thanks for listening to the just completed Public Affairs or News program. As a listener-sponsored community radio station, WPFW appreciates your feedback, whether favorable or otherwise. To provide your feedback, even if it is regarding one of our many music programs, simply email us at info@wpfw.org. That's info@wpfw.org. www.org.
Hi, I'm Jerry Motti, office manager for WPFW. And you are tuned to member-supported WPFW, Washington.
Out of the tree of life, I just picked me a plum.